Then plus there's no finals during that time. All right, here we go. Parshugas. I saw, tangentially, I happened to see a drush of Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer wrote more than you can possibly ever imagine. The amount of Sfarim that he wrote, the amount of Chidushim that he had like 20 Chidushim for every Pasuk in every Parsha. And he just wrote them all over the place. He wrote them in Shalos HaTshuvos, he wrote them in his stuff on Shas, he wrote in his stuff on the Chumash, but he has three different Sfarim on Chumash. He has all these different types of things that are out there. So I found the drush of Chassam Sofer by Parshas Parah. This is a drusha that he set out during Parshas Parah. It doesn't say what year. Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu was the only person who ever knew the secret of the Parah Adumah, that ever knew why we have a red heifer. Like, what's the point of having this red heifer? So why do we have it? The sod was only known by Moshe, and no one else has it. That's v'yichuei lecha. And you should take for yourself, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're the only one who's ever going to know this. No one else will get this secret. Everybody else will be sitting there and trying to figure it out. Take the ashes, burn them, mix them in with water, with a little hyssop, sprinkle it on a guy, and magically it becomes tahor. How that works, why that works, and when. It happened 11 times. There were 11 paradumas throughout history. And it's very easy to keep going. The Gemara says it in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma. We don't know only the last one that we had was in the middle of the second base of Mikdash. It doesn't say exactly when, but it was toward the times of the Yavanim. It was around that time. No, much later than that. Much later than Shimon HaZan. No, it was about 300 years.
Why was it applicable? For what reason?
To make a person from Tamei Meis. Yeah, somebody who's Tamei Meis to make you taller. Nowadays, we don't have the Parah Adumah, that's why we can't go on to Har HaBayis. But if we had the ashes of the Parah Adumah, then we'd be able to go on to Har HaBayis. So, but the reasoning behind it, the idea of, like, how somebody, let's not talk about that right now. So right now, let's not talk about that right now. This is not the time for us to kill you. So the this is even more interesting. It's getting more interesting as we go on. So here we go. Moshe Rabbeinu was told the reason behind it. In other words, the chok of the Parah Adumah, why it happens and why the person who does it becomes Tameh, while it makes the person who does it become Tohar. The person who has it done to him, he becomes Tohar. How does all that work, and what does a red heifer have to do with anything? The secret is only known by Moshe Rabbeinu, and nobody else knows. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu was a Tov Ayin. He loved giving us everything that we could possibly have, so therefore, he gave us all the secrets of the Torah, everything that he could find, everything that he had, including Pilpul, including everything like that. He gave us everything except for the secret of the Parah Adumah. It's the one thing that he never, ever would give us. He would never give us this one thing. But the problem is that Rashi quotes a Medrash why we have the Parah Adumah. And it's brought down later on in a Medrash Acher, later on in the Parsha, and it says, because Tavua Aim, but Tchaper Al Banah, that the mother is going to come and wipe up the dirtiness that its child does. That Tavua Parah, but Tchaper Al Egel. That the cow should be, this Parah Adumah should be a kapara for the Egel Azov that we did. That's a great reason for the Parah Adumah. You got an Egel Azov. So we're not going to bring an egel and burn it into the ashes, because that reminds Hashem about the egel, but we'll bring a Parah Adumah. The mother will come along and clean up everything for us. Everything will be fine after that. That's the reason given. So what's pshat, says the Chassam Sofer? It's a stira. Do we know the secret or do we not know the secret? Says the Chassam Sofer, it's the first time I've ever seen anything like this. B'nai Yisrael were able to figure this out on their own. They didn't need anybody else to tell them. They figured it out on their own. They used their seichel. They figured out everything on their own. And Reb Moshe Darshan, that Rashi quotes, was Megala the Sod that Moshe Rabbeinu knew from the beginning of time. Because we were so great and we got into learning so well, we figured it out. And this is the secret. This is the secret that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to tell it to us. At the time, Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to say anything. But once we figured it out, and once we figured it out, then it was given to us, and then we're perfectly fine. And now we know the secret behind the Parah Adumah. It's all for the Egel Azov, and that was exactly it, and there's nothing else to it. Okay.
But no one gets credit for having thought of it?
No, the person who learned it for sure gets credit for it. The person who thought of it. But Moshe Rabbeinu was told, you can't tell anyone. So Moshe Rabbeinu never told anyone. But everybody else was able to do it. It's not so crazy, right? But that's the point. Sodas HaTorah are right there. They're sitting there right there in front of you. And all you have to do is just learn it a little bit. Get a little bit into it and you can figure out what the secret is. The problem is that people say, I'm not going to be able to figure it out anyway. So they get away. But you got to sit there and you got to say to yourself, I want to do it. That's what the Chassam Sofer says. Now the first Rashi says that the Satan and the Umos Olam, the nations of the world, they oppress the Jews and they say, what's shot in this mitzvah? What's the reason behind the Parah Adumah? Why are you guys doing the Parah Adumah? And that's That's what the pasuk says. It's a chok. Zos chukas haTorah. It's a chok of the Torah. It's gezerah himelafana. It's a gezerah in front of me, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and nobody will be able to figure it out. It's a chok, and nobody's going to be able to figure it out. That you won't. I don't want you to think about it. I don't want you to go into it or anything like that. Okay, I understand that, but we have an answer now. We know that it's because of the Egel Azov. So what's the pshat behind us telling the nations of the world that it's a chok? Why do we have to do that? So Rav Shor brings down a story about the Beis Yisrael. The Beis Yisrael was the third Ger Rebbe, the fourth Ger Rebbe, the son of the Imre Emes. The Beis Yisrael was walking around in Yerushalayim, and he got up really, really early one morning, and he met a certain Talmid Chacham in the street. He met this Talmid Chacham, and he started speaking to him and learning. They had already said Birkas HaTorah. It's kind of hard not to say Birkas HaTorah when you're the Beis Yisrael and you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he was walking around, and they heard from the outside the Arabs with their, you know, the prayers that they do. So they heard the prayers. So the Beis Yisrael turned to the Talmid Chacham who was with him and said, "Do you understand what they're saying?" So the guy said, "I don't know Arabic. I have absolutely no idea." So the Beis Yisrael said to him, "You know what they're doing? They're saying right now how Bnei Yisrael did the Egel Azov and how they should be in charge of the world. That's what they're saying. That the nations of the world know what the pshat is behind the paraduma, because we said it already. We know the paraduma is because it's a kapara for the Egel Azov. What the nations of the world are trying to do is to get us to say it. So they can say to us, what kind of a fool are you? 40 days after you got the Torah, you went ahead and did that? You did the Egel Azov 40 days after you received the Torah? What's wrong with you? They want to do that so that they can be nailed, that they look at us and they say, like, you're a bunch of fools. You're a bunch of idiots. So that they can look at a Kadosh Baruch Hu and say, you like this nation? You're going to give stuff to this nation? That's what they want to do. They're mentioning the Cheda Egel so that the kitzur of the accusation in Shemayim is going to be so great that people are going to say, like, what in the world is going on here? The other nations are sitting there, and what do we tell them back? We don't tell them because of the Cheda Egel. What do we tell them back? It's a chok. It's a chok. Period, it's a chok. And they look at us like, no, come on, but it's a real reason, right? You got a reason for it, right? They want us to say because the ego is up, but we don't mention it to them. We don't say a thing because we don't want to be mekatrik on ourselves. We don't want to make that accusation on ourselves and say to ourselves, we were the ones that did the ego is up. We want to bring that out of our minds. We want to push it out. No, oh, I realized that we made a mistake. Forget about it. We didn't do it. Now we only have the paraduma. Now there's only this paraduma. There's nothing else. We don't want to think of anything else. And that's good enough. So when somebody asks me, I just say it's a chok. And that's it. I don't understand it, and I don't have to say anything at all.
You just mentioned that it's a chok, also kind of rejects the argument of the goyim. Say, how can you worship the Egel Azov?
How can you worship
Torah? Understand. Okay, well, we did shuva. Why? Because we do this weird child.
Right, because we do something strange. Such a crazy thing. Yes, 100%. I would agree with that as well. They say that the real tikkun for the Egel Azov is the fact that you sit and learn Torah. And that's why in the middle of the parsha it says, Zos HaTorah, Adam ki yomus ba'ol, when a man dies in the oil, call ba'ol ova hashir ba'ol yitmar shivas yomus. They say ki yomus ba'ol, you want to be in the oil of Torah? You want to be able to understand the oil of Torah? You have to be memes atzmo. You have to kill yourself over Torah. You have to do everything you possibly can to destroy yourself in order to learn. Do everything you can. But the Chofetz Chaim says, wait a second. V'chai b'hem. You got to live. You got to live in order to learn Torah. You can't just sit there and kill yourself over Torah. You're not allowed to die over learning Torah. If somebody comes up to you and puts a gun to your head, and he says, either don't learn Torah or I'll kill you. You're not allowed to learn Torah. It's usur to learn Torah and be killed. It's usur if he goes ahead and does that. So what's going on? How do you understand this? So the Chofetz Chaim says a classic mashal. Classic mashal. There's a merchant. The guy worked, you know what, let's not use a merchant. Let's do a lawyer. This lawyer graduated from Harvard Law, and he got an immediate job with a great salary, startup salary of $350,000. The problem is that you get a $350,000 salary at a big firm downtown, you know you're going to have to work at least 80 hours a week. He was there all day and all night. All day and all night. He had to work weekends. He didn't work on Shabbos, obviously, but he worked his way around, and he worked every single day of the week, like 12 hours, 14 hours, 15 hours a day in order to keep going and keep going. And he did it for the next 10 years. He barely saw his family. He wasn't able to go to Minyan. He wasn't able to learn anything. He sat there, and every single time that he sat there, he just said, you know what? I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep doing this. It's going to be better for me at the end. It's going to be better for me at the end. And years went on, and he became a junior partner. Then he became a partner. And then he got all the way up in the system, and he started doing these, and he started lowering his days a little bit, but he's so used to being this workaholic, as working 80-hour work weeks, that he couldn't stop himself. And he said to himself, you know what? I'll make myself down to 75. 75. And when I go on vacation with my family, that's the one I'll make it up to them. And I'll keep doing this, and I'll keep doing that. But eventually he got really old. 55, 60 years old. And he said to himself, you know, this is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm getting older now. I'm going to die soon. And I still haven't learned. I still haven't davened. I still haven't done anything. So I got to start working on myself and then start going. So instead of going to the law firm in the morning, because now he was really basically in charge, it was now known by his name, you know, Schwartz or Friedman or whatever it is, the law firm is now known by his name, he decided, you know what, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to say to myself, I'll learn for an extra 2 hours every morning. I'll go to davening, I'll learn for an extra 2 hours, find a chavrusa, and then afterward, that's when I'll go into work. So his wife, one time, weeks later, months later, who knows, happened to stop by his office and wanted to say, you know, like, I'll see how my husband's doing. She looks in the office, she sees tons of clients there, but her husband's not there. So she said, what's going on? What's happening? Where's my husband? She calls up her husband. Her husband tells her, listen, I'm busy with something, I'll see you later. I'll see you later. She forgets about it. A couple weeks later, she goes back. She notices he's not there. What's going on here? So she starts searching for him. She goes to one place, goes to another place. Finally, she goes to Shul. And she sees him, wrapped in talis and tefillin, sitting in the base medrash, learning with a chavrusa. She looks at him. She's like, what are you, crazy? Listen, I know we don't need the money. We got a lot of money, and thank God, everything's pretty good, and you've given me everything that I could ever ask for. But you've got tons of clients waiting for you in your office. And you're sitting here? What are you doing? You're supposed to be at work. Your whole life has been about work. Now, all of a sudden, you're giving that up? And the guy looks at her, and he says, listen, honey, I understand, but I want you to look at it this way. Let's say the Malach HaMavis would come up to you right now and say, I'm taking away your husband. Would you say to him, listen, he's got a lot of clients at work. You can't take him right now. He's so busy at work. You can't take him right now. Of course not. What are you going to tell him? You don't have a choice. Said her husband, look at it as if the Malach HaMavis came today. If the Malach HaMavis came today, I wouldn't be here. During these hours and I'm sitting and learning, when I'm sitting by myself, don't think about anything else other than the fact that I'm sitting here and I have a chiyuv. I have a chiyuv to get myself ready for that day when the Malach HaMavis does come. Think about nothing else. Pretend as if the Malach HaMavis is there. Sobering thought. But says the Chofetz Chaim, that's the idea of Meis Ba'ohel. What the idea is behind somebody who dies in Ohel is exactly this. To be able to learn and not be distracted by everything that's going on, because, man, we have billions of distractions. Billions. To be able to sit there and understand that there's going to be crazy people, there's going to be crazy thoughts, there's going to be all these different types of things. You have to sit there and you have to say to yourself, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because what if the Malach HaMavis came at this point? You have to be willing to kill yourself, to look at yourself as if you're dead, as if you are dead, in order to really get yourself to learn. And that's what it means by Adam ki yamus ba'ohel. When a person looks at himself as if he's yamus ba'ohel. And Perek Lamed Tes, Pasuk Gimel, Parsh Dosa Bracha, that was the bracha that was given over to Levi. I'm sorry, in Perek Lamed Dalet, I said Lamed Tes, Lamed Dalet in Pasuk Tes. This is what the Pasuk says. It says, Ha'omer lo'avi v'li'imo lo'risiv. Levi says to his father and his mother, I've never seen you. Metzachov lo'ikir, he doesn't even recognize his brother. This banav lo'yabi, he doesn't even know his children. Ki shamrim ha'sechov riskin so, because they kept the Torah. They sat there and they kept the Torah and they did everything they could when it came to the Torah. Why? Because they knew that's the only way they're going to be able to learn. Later on in life is when they realize they have to do a little bit more and they have to spend a little bit more time. But that's the person, not that you actually do it and that you ditch your family, you have nothing to do with them, you don't want to be anywhere near them, not like that. But you say to yourself, in order for me to learn, I have to look at myself as if there's nothing going on. During the hour, the 2 hours, the 3 hours, whatever I have during the day to be able to learn, I have to say to myself, nothing else matters. Not the fact that I have other classes to go to, not the fact that I have other things to do at home, not the fact that I have kids, not anything. The only thing that matters is that I have to learn right now. That's the only thing that matters, and that's the only thing that I have to do. Skipping all the way to the end of the parsha. It's Nachashim everywhere. The whole parsha of the Nachash Nachosh, yeah.
Just going back to the Chok, isn't that contrary to like what a Chok really is?
What do you mean?
Well, a Chok's supposed to be something that we just don't... I mean, isn't it supposed to be something that just God said and just do it? There isn't a reason. I mean, even if we come up with a reason, there isn't really a reason for it.
But HaKadosh Baruch Hu did tell Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to tell you the sod behind the Paraduma. So even though he called it a Chok, there's still a sod that Moshe Rabbeinu was given. There's something there. There is a reason there. And we might not know it, but there is a reason given over there. That's the idea behind it. So I'm sorry that it goes all the way back, but that would be the idea behind it. There is a sod, there is a tam, there is something there, and that's something that we'd have to understand. That's something that he's trying to get there. Okay, at the end of the parsha, there's nachashim everywhere. Here's what happens. It switches from saraf to nachash. It goes from all over the place. It's one of the strangest little things in the world. It says that Vayidaber on Belukim of Moshe, they started talking about God and Moshe. Lama listen to Mitzrayim, why bring us out from Mitzrayim? It's something that's getting old already. Kein lechem ein mayim, we don't have any bread, we don't have any water, Meshinu katzav lechem al kol kel. So God sent against the people Hanechoshim Hasarothim. He sent against them poisonous snakes. Tons of Jews died. We sinned. We spoke about God. We spoke about you. Daven to God and get rid of the Nachosh from us. But the only mention Hanachosh, not the plural Nachoshim. And the only mention the Nachosh, they don't mention the Saroth. So what's going on? Make for yourself a Saroth. A poisonous snake. Make for yourself a poisonous snake with simos on it and put it up on top of a pole. The famous Hippocratic oath, the little snakes on a pole. The idea of put it up on a pole. Anybody that is bitten will see that snake on a pole and he'll die. By Yas Moshe, it's probably the idea behind snakes on a plane as well. By Yas Moshe, Nechash and Nechoshes, and Moshe Rabbeinu made a Nechosh, and Nechoshes, not a Sarah. He made a Nechosh of copper. By Yisimeo HaNeis, and he put it on the pole. By Yenoshach HaNechosh is the Ish, if the snake bit a person, he bit all Nechosh and Nechoshes with Bachai. Then he looked at the Nechosh and Nechoshes, and he was able to live. What's going on here? What's the difference between a Nechosh and a Sarah? What's the idea behind it? Why do we keep switching? What's going on with this whole thing? So first of all, the Ramban says the most unbelievable thing. He says, it's a nes b'soch nes. If a person is bitten by a rabid dog, the last thing you want to do is be seen by a rabid dog. By a dog. If you look at a dog after being bitten by a rabid dog, says the Ramban, you're going to get crazed. It's going to hurt you even more. It's going to be something that inside you're going to turn a little bit more animalistic. It should be the dog that bit you. The dog that bit you or the type of dog that bit you. So if you get dogged by, I don't know,
what if the
type of whatever
dog,
it is.
I'm totally biased here, but what if the type of dog that bit you is the same type of dog that you own?
Yeah, you're pretty bad. Pretty bad. But that's only before you get like the little shots. But if you end up having, if you get bitten by that rabid dog, again, rabid dog, then you end up having, then the Ramban goes a little crazy. And I went online to go look to see if any of this was brought down by medical science. I found a lot of kofim. So let's not look this up online. Let's just take the words of the Ramban for this, and when Mashiach comes, he'll explain it very, very well, because right now I don't have the ability to explain this. He says, so here's the idea. If you get bitten or stung by a certain very poisonous animal, you're bitten by a rabid dog, says the Ramban, that person, if he sees even the shadow or the reflection of that dog, will die immediately. But not only that. You can't even say the name of that animal that bit you, that was rabid. You can't even say the name dog. You say the name dog, and you're already destroyed. And doctors know, says the Ramban, that if you take the urine of that person that got bitten by a rabid dog, you take his urine, and you put it in a glass cup, you will see tiny little dogs in the urine.
Awesome.
In the urine, you will see it. And if you sift it through, says the Ramban, you sift it through, and you get it on the other side, then you wait a little bit, and if you wait about an hour, and it settles again, you'll see again little tiny dogs inside that urine. That's what the Ramban says. I can't. That's what the Ramban says. That's not crazy?
No, I know it's not like a crazy dog. You think of like other things that
have happened, 100%, but this isn't
that
like a
case. In urine?
It's a little crazy. I am assuming that the Ramban is talking something that we don't understand, that we don't have. Either it doesn't happen nowadays, or something a little bit different. First of all, I don't know anybody that took the urine of somebody who was bitten by a rabid dog and looked at it. I can't imagine that ever happened. But there's something here that the Ramban is telling us, and I'm not so sure exactly what it is. But if you're bitten by a snake, let's say you're bitten by a really poisonous snake. The last thing you want to see is a poisonous snake. If you're looking up at that poisonous snake that's on top of the pole, it's the worst thing for you to see, says Ramban. The worst thing. And yet, that's what a Kodesh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to do. Take a snake, put it on top of the pole, let them look up at it. So even though you're bitten by a snake, you're going to look at a snake, and that snake is going to be your refuah. That snake is going to be how you get healed. That's what he ends up saying. Hashem tells him, says the Meshech Chochma, to place the Nachash on top of a pole. Here's what the Meshech Chochma says. It says, V'haya ko anoshuch. It will be that anybody gets bitten. V'haya is a lashon of simcha. Vayihi is a lashon of sadness. V'haya is v'simcha. V'haya ki sabol aris. When you come into the land, you're going to bring bikurim. V'haya is a lashon of simcha, says the Gemara. So how in the world is this a simcha? Why are you so happy? You just got bitten by a snake. Yes! I got bitten by a snake. Here's pshat, says the Meshech Chochma. Even if a person was sick and dying for another reason, nothing to do with the poison. He was sick on his deathbed and dying, and then he was bitten by a snake. Can't get much worse than that, right? You're dying, and then you're bitten by a snake, and then you look up at the nace, You look up at the pole that has Nachash around it, you not only get healed from the snake bite, you get healed from whatever sickness it is that you have. Says the Meshech Chokma, it was Bahaya. It was a good thing that you got bitten. You think at the time it's the worst thing in the world because you just got bitten. I can't believe it. Like, could anything else happen? You want to just punch me in the stomach? God, if you want to punch me in the stomach, I'm wide open. You can go ahead. I'm not going to fight back. Instead, it's just the opposite. It's the exact opposite. It's Simcha. Because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to know. Says the Alinu Shabbat Revisa Xoberstein on that Meshech Chokma. Because even though his Gezer was permiso, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets out a word and says, I want something to heal you, he doesn't differentiate between healing you for the snake bite or anything else. It heals for everything. The Nachash on the Nachash that was up there on top of the pole heals everyone from every sickness that they could possibly have, including snake bites, including dog bites, including anything else that was there. The Baal HaTorah says there were also dogs biting people as well. Not your dogs, don't worry, but everybody else's dogs. The Malbim says, Adam, Chava, and the Nachash is not just a Maisa that happened at the beginning of creation. It's a remez to what happens to every person every single day. The Adam is your Seichel, your Bina, your understanding. The Isha, Chava, is your Guf, your body. And the Satan is the Nachash, the Yetzer Hara that's within you. It's convincing you to do something bad. That's the Nachash. The Nachash that's biting you and saying to you, I want you to do something terrible. I want you to do something bad. That's the Nachash that tries to pull you in. He throws in, he seduces the goof by sitting there and poisoning you, by putting in his teeth and trying to poison you, and he turns all of your lechem, all the good things that you have, into offer. Because the lechem, the bread of the snake, is the dust of the earth. The mun that tastes like anything you want, the Nachash can turn that into garbage. Nachash can say, it's not good enough. He can turn anything into offer. He can turn anything into garbage. That's shot behind the Gemara that says that the spine of a person, the Gemara in Bava Kama, says the spine of a person after 7 years turns into a Nachash if you don't bow down during Modim. If you don't bow down during Modim in the middle of your Shemana Esrei for Modim, then your spine and your back will turn into a Nachash. What's shot? Because the Nachash will take over your body. If you're not Modim that there's a God, that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu looking on top of you, watching over you, doing everything you have to do, if you're not Modim that somebody is trying to rule over you, then forget it. You might as well just give in right now. Because your spine will turn into the Nachash and you'll have absolutely no idea. There's no way to be able to get out. And that's why, says the Rabbeinu Bachaya, the people asked to remove HaNachash. Not the Nachashim, but the Nachash, the singular Nachash. Who's the Nachash? It's a reference to the Nachash Shalamala, says the Rabbeinu Bachaya. It's a reference to the Satan. And that's why they said, not Mi Beinenu, and not Mi Menu, to remove it from us. They said, Me'alenu, from on top of us. Remove the Satan, the Yetzer Sahara from on top of us. Get rid of him completely. Don't let him be around me. I don't want the Nachash Olamala anywhere near me. And says Rav Wolfson, that's why it's up on top of a pole. Why not just say, everybody look up to the sky? So you look at God, and you remember there's a God in Shemayim, and everything will be all good. Why not say that? Would it have to be a Nachash on top of the pole? And also, the Medrash says, Medrash Rabbah in Perek Yud Tes Halacha Yud Beis, it says, it wasn't on a pole. Ben Nes does not mean on top of a pole. There was a Nachash just sitting up there in the middle of the sky. It was something floating up in the middle of the sky. And the people looked up at it, and they saw that Nachash floating in the sky, and they were in wonder. And they couldn't understand. They said, it must be a huge miracle. And they realized that there's a God. They realized there's Nisim going on. What's shot behind that miracle? Why did God have to do that? Why not just make a pole? What's the problem with making a pole? It says the following. It says, every animal in the world has a Malach on top of them in Shemayim. The Nachash has the Satan. His name is Samkel, Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. That's the Malach that's on top of the Satan. He's the one that rode on top of the Nachash, the original Nachash that made Adam, Rishon, and Chava sin. It's not the Nachash that's evil. It's its Malach that's evil, that makes it do evil things, that has it bite other animals for no reason other than the fact that, what the heck? What the heck? Why not? Why can't I bite everyone? Why can't I do whatever I want? When Moshe made the Nachash and put it in Shemayim, the people realized it's not the physical earthly snake that kills. It's the Nachash Shalamala that kills. What's the Nachash Shalamala? The Satan. The Satan is the one that has the koach to kill me. The Satan is the one that has the koach to get rid of. So if I get rid of the Satan, if I get rid of all my sins, then I'm going to be fine. But until that point, I'm not going to be able to. So he made a Nachash, and he put the Nachash in Shemayim, and he reminded you, the Nachash down here means nothing. There's no snake, there's no animal, there's nothing that can hurt you. It's the Malach and Shemayim that wants to get you. And if you sin, that's what's going to be there. They say about Rav Elchanan Wasserman that when he came to L.A. to collect money, he walked into a house, or walked into the front of the house, and he started knocking on the door, and they said, the people in the house said, they had this dog, a watchdog, this huge dog, and whenever anyone came to the house, it would run up to the front door and would start barking like mad. Barking like mad. Go right up to the door, start barking like mad. When Rav Elchanan Wasserman came to the house, the dog started running to the door, stopped about a foot away from the door, and stood there. The people went to the door, opened it up, Rav Elchanan Wasserman came in, the caliph stood there. The dog stayed exactly where it was until Rav Elchanan Wasserman left, and then the dog went straight back to the kitchen. That's what they say about Rav Elchanan Wasserman. That's one of the famous stories. It's one of the things that was told to Rav Simcha Wasserman when Rav Simcha Wasserman first came to L.A., the son of Rav Elchanan. He said, you'll never believe what happened to Rav Elchanan when he came here once. That's what they say. Because if you know that it's not the nachash that kills, it's not the dog that's barking, it's not that, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's your sins that is making that happen, then you know there's nothing to worry about. Absolutely nothing to worry about. There's a wolf chasing after you in the middle of the street, you'll turn around, you'll be like, I'm good. I don't have to worry about anything. That's why you say that pasuk of Bnei Yisrael Lo Yechartz Kelev Lashono. The idea of saying that pasuk for all Bnei Yisrael, no dog barks, and the dog stops barking. Because at that point you're doing a mitzvah, you're learning Torah. You're saying over a pasuk of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that makes a dog stop barking. I can tell you that it does work. I've had a case where a dog was chasing after me. It wasn't chasing. It was in the street, and it was a dog that was just in the street. It was very late at night. I was on the other side of a little tiny fence, maybe a 1 foot thing. It was in a Vayakov. I used that pasuk. And then I ran, like mad. Absolutely like mad. And it didn't chase me. And so I'm very happy about that. And I don't like, that's one of my scarier stories. I'm fine. We're all good. So I wasn't bitten. But that's the idea. To see the sound that's up there. And that's shot in the Gemara with Rechanina Mendoza. The Gemara Brachos and Daplam and Gimom and Aleph that says there was a snake that was killing everyone. Whenever anybody came near, the snake killed them. The snake would bite them. And those guys, then it would run to water. Some strange Gemara. And every time it got to water first, it killed the person. I have no idea what that means. But the snake was biting people and killing people. Rechanina Mendoza said, I'll take care of it. Rechanina Mendoza put his leg right on top of the hole of the snake. Snake came up, bit his leg, and the snake died. So, okay, I understand that Rechanim Mendoza didn't die. I understand that, right? But why'd the snake have to die? Why'd the snake have to die? Because Rechanim Mendoza not only didn't have any sins, he killed his Yetzer Hara. If he killed his Yetzer Hara, that means his chelek of the satan that was within him was gone. Which means the snake that was there from the satan died because the chelek of the satan in that snake was dead, was killed. That's what Rechanim Mendoza was able to do. He was able to kill that snake and knock it down and destroy it completely. I'm going to tell you a Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer says the following. He says, they were asking to get rid of their Yetzer Hara for Lashon Hara. So here's the idea. Bnei Yisrael had a problem. They had spoken Lashon Hara about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and about Moshe Rabbeinu. Now here's the deal, said the Chassam Sofer. I said the Chafetz Chaim. And it's the classic Chafetz Chaim. You know the Chafetz Chaim. I mean, very against Lashon Hara, right? He sits there and he says, if a person does a chet, a person does an avera, there's a kitrug made for him in Shemayim, there's a makatrug, there's an accuser. That accusing malach does not speak. It stands up there in Beis Din Shalom Ala, and when you go up to Shemayim, it just stands there. And you're just looking at it and you're like, get away. But it won't go away. If you do tshuva, then he runs away. And you don't have to worry about it because he's not there anymore. Says the Chafetz Chaim, if you speak Lashon Hara, it makes an accuser in Shemayim that can talk. And even if you chase it away, even if you chase that malach away, it still talks. And its words can be heard by the Beis Din while your din is going on in Shemayim. So you're sitting there and they're like, so how's everything going? How was your life? What do you think about your life? Did you do any sins? And you're like, well, I didn't. And all of a sudden the malach starts speaking. He spoke Lashon Hara. He's just like, shut up. That's all you're saying. And you're sitting there, and you're just trying to get it to stop. But it won't stop. Says the Chafetz Chaim, it's a malach that doesn't stop talking. It just sits there and keeps going and going and going and going. So normal averos, you're able to knock down. Normal averos, you can take them down and you can stop them and everything. But the kitrug from Lashon Hara doesn't stop. It's a constant peh, a constant Lashon. Because it was created with your Lashon, and it's constantly telling you over your averos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not help the Bali Lashon Hara. So listen to what happens. It becomes like a rabid dog, out of control, running around in Shemayim, saying over the terrible things that you did. So Moshe Rabbeinu davened for the Mekatrigim to be gone, all those accusers to be gone. He davened to get rid of it, because that's what Bnei Israel asked for. Get rid of the Nachash. Get rid of that accuser for Lashon Hara that we have in Shemayim. Get rid of that guy. And Moshe Rabbeinu davened for it. But unlike any other davening that Moshe Rabbeinu ever did, where Moshe Rabbeinu davened and it just happened. Whatever they needed to do, it just happened. Please, Hashem, don't kill Bnei Israel. So Kadosh Baruch Hu, fine. Absolutely fine. Here, it was different. Kadosh Baruch Hu told me you have to put something up on top of a nes. Put something up on top of a pole. Why? Because Lashon Hara cannot be taken care of just through tefillah. You have to actually be meshabed yourself to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and beg God never to speak Lashon Hara again. If you don't do that, there's no way for you to fix yourself or to get rid of that accusation in Shemayim. There's nothing you can do to get rid of Lashon Hara. I'm going to stop with one last thing. The Tur and the Shach say one thing from the Maral Diskin. They say that the Nachash and the Saraf are from both Moshe Rabbeinu and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, they spoke Lashon Hara on me, that's a Nachash. But they spoke Lashon Hara about you, Moshe Rabbeinu. And that deserves a Saraf. A Saraf is much worse than a Nachash, because a Kadosh Baruch Hu treats somebody who makes fun of Talmidei Chachamim very, very seriously. Somebody who does that, he treats it extremely seriously. That's why it says the word Asei Lecha Saraf. Make for yourself, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, a Saraf. Why a Saraf? Because a Saraf was representative of the Lashon Hara, was representing the Lashon Hara that Moshe Rabbeinu had said about him. Says Maral Diskin. Moshe Rabbeinu said, forget it. I'm mochel on my own problems. He said, I don't want this Saraf. I want a Nachash. But why do I want a Nachash? I want a Nachash and a Choshes. Where did Nachoshes come from? There's Zav, Kesef, and a Choshes. Zav is for Avram Avinu. Kesef is for Yitzchak Avinu, and Nechoshes is from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu had the ability to be perfect, to be Shalom Mikol. Take the schus of Yaakov Avinu, bring it down to Klal Yisrael, and allow them to be perfect in everything they do, so that they understand, even though bad things happen, you still have that ability to do tshuva and to make yourself better. Do whatever you can to be better. He made the Nechosh, not just Sam out of gold, not out of silver, he made it out of Nechoshes. And why Nechoshes? Because he knew the only way to help was to bring about Yaakov Avinu, to take down the schus of Yaakov Avinu, to help out Klal Yisrael, to make sure that all happened. So let's summarize. Paraduma is a chok. Even though we figured out the sod, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't tell anyone. And it's truly a chok in the way that we should look at it, in the way that we should tell other people, so we don't remind ourselves of the Egel Azov. To learn Torah, you have to act like you're dead. To act like you already killed yourself. That's what you have to do. Number three, the nes here was opposites. It's simcha for those who already had, who were sick, and it's the nachash within us that they were asking to get rid of. That nachash was the Lashon Hara that they were speaking. That nachash was the satan that was sitting there upon them that they were asking, they were begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu, get rid of this from me. And if we have a choice between a nachash and a saraf, the saraf is worse. The saraf represented Moshe and the nachash represented Hashem. They were asking to get rid of both of them, and that's what ended up happening at the end of the parsha. So we'll stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos. That's good. From